Monster Man, episode 458, Swan May to Taco?
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we are taking a look at some more monsters from Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. Before we look at today's monsters, though, it's time to take care of some business, and that means thanking some Patreon backers. Yes, these are people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they have pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And if, like today's backers, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, in which I take a look at the myths and religions of the world and how to use them for inspiration in your fantasy role-playing games. So thank you very much to returning patrons, Thomas Louth, and Ray Hinojosa. Your support means a lot to me, and I'm glad that you're enjoying the show. All right, let's take a look at today's monsters. First up, we have the Swan May. We have talked about the Swan May before. They are one of that genre of shapeshifters whose shapeshifting is accomplished by means of some magical item, often like a feather bracelet or a feather cloak. Folklorically, I think they most resemble the Selkie. There's a kind of motif of someone who marries a Swan May, sometimes by hiding her feather cloak or because someone else is in her feather cloak. Here, the Swan Mays are given a society, which is something that they didn't have when they first appeared in Monster Manual 2. They were typically kind of rangers and they protect wild places. You often won't know that the person you're talking to is a Swan May, or indeed that the swan you see going past is a Swan May. They're a sort of initiatory lodge of rangers. You know, they're not born lycanthropes. It's something that you gain when you become initiated to this society. I'm sure I said it before, but the Swan May here reminds me of the Swan May in Michael Scott Rohan's Winter of the World series, where they're kind of conflated, or I think there's one Swan May character is kind of conflated with a Valkyrie, who also, you know, are women who have flight powers. And then that's kind of connected to like Freya's bird feather cloak from Norse mythology, which she can use to fly. In addition to the Swan May, and really taking up nearly half the entry, we get bird maidens. They are, again, an all-female group of were-birds. They can turn into different kinds of birds, and they come from the Al-Qadim setting. They, like the Swan May, they respect and protect nature, but unlike them, they're not organized into like a single society. They're mentioned in the Al-Qadim set, I guess, and then they were further expanded in an article in Dragon Magazine number 218, although that wouldn't come out until a little bit after this in 1995. I think they're fine. I don't know that I like the name Bird Maiden, but the creatures themselves are satisfyingly atmospheric, and the idea of a magical ally like this is cool. I like the idea that you meet some mysterious woman in some like lonely mountaintop or some secluded oasis. And then, you know, when you turn around, she's gone, but like, wait, was that hawk there before? Kind of thing. Like, it adds to the sense of this character being like a supernatural ally or a supernatural enemy, I guess. Following the Swan May, we get the Tabaxi. These are cat people. We saw them in the Fiend Folio where they were introduced. I want to say they're written by Lawrence Schick. And they're shown here as kind of leopard or jaguar people. They look more big cat-y than they did in the Fiend Folio, but they looked more a bit like domestic cats, although I don't think that's what they were intended to be like, just kind of how they were drawn. And I think that that is how they have sort of tended to be in modern D&D. I think that most people, when they think about Tabaxi, think about like a cat. There's this weird distinction here between Leopard Tabaxi and Jaguar Tabaxi. Jaguar Tabaxi call themselves Tabashi. I guess that idea is that sh is how you would pronounce X in some of the kind of like indigenous languages of kind of Mexico and Central America. You get jaguars in like the Yucatan, you know, they're an important part of the symbolism of Maya culture. So trying to give them a kind of like Mesoamerican vibe. And they're described as having, you know, obsidian studded clubs and whatnot, as opposed to the leopard people who I guess you would find in a pseudo-African or pseudo-Mediterranean setting. But this feels like a bit of a pointless distinction to me. I think your game's probably not going to have both kinds in it, so I don't necessarily see why it's there, but, you know, whatever. This entry also includes the Tabaxi Lord, which is a bit weird. So Tabaxi Lords seem like exceptionally large and powerful tabaxi, but they're actually kind of a different creature that interbreeds with a tabaxi and isn't really like a tabaxi exactly. I thought that was odd, but I sort of like it. I sort of like the idea that they, you know, again, because it's a bit weird and it's kind of like, it treats them more like they might be some kind of spirit than just like a person. I think it's sort of pleased to the part of me that wants monsters to seem alien and magical. Finally, we have the Tako, T-A-K-O. It is a little unfortunate that this creature is called a Tako. That doesn't sound very menacing, and I say that even without including, you know, Tako, you know, from TV, the wizard from the Adventure Zone podcast. But these guys, unfortunately, yeah, they are called Takos. I keep calling it Tako because that's how it reads to me, but it might be like Tako. I don't know how it's properly pronounced in Japanese, but in Japan, this word just means octopus. These octopus creatures are called octopus, which, that's fine, I guess. You know, one of the problems about picking terms because they seem exotic or unfamiliar, or because you think people won't know what they mean, or, you know, even if they do, it'll be like a fun little in-joke. I think in a changing landscape, you have to maybe think a little bit about how that's going to age. If you look at like World War II comic books, for instance, when Japanese characters speak Japanese, it's often represented by just like gibberish scrawls. And that is, you know, I mean, racism plays a role in that. But it's also the case that I think they were pretty sure that the, you know, the overwhelming majority of their audience didn't speak a word of Japanese and wouldn't have a way to look it up even if they wanted to. That's not really true anymore, right? Like, I don't speak Japanese, but I just typed Tako octopus into Google, and that's what I got. So, okay, it sounds like they're called tacos, like the delicious Mexican food, but actually they're called Tako, like the no doubt delicious, but I don't eat meat, Japanese seafood. I think this happens a lot if you speak a language other than English, French, or Spanish, and maybe German, but like Warhammer is full of German puns. I think you run into like some demonic bear spirit and it's called something that sounds cool, and then you realize it's just like Bulgarian for bear or something. I think that's probably pretty common. Anyway, the Tako. They were a species of intelligent octopus. They're kind of like amphibious, I guess. They are found in the Karatur region of the Forgotten Realms setting. They have different stat blocks for males and females. And the females are kind of like the leader of their communities. They're a bit tougher, a bit smarter, but there are fewer of them. They're able to attack with weapons in up to 7 of their limbs, while the 8th one, like, anchors them. You know, they hold on to something underwater. This reminds me a bit of the advice of the Sphinx, as played by Wes Studi in the film Mystery Men. You must lash out with every limb, like the octopus that plays the drums. Speaking of weirdness, there's something a little weird about the Tako. The Orientalism is further reinforced by the fact that they have, you know, a strong sense of honor. Now, normally I don't like it when this idea that there's somehow something more honorable about the ethos of Asian societies than of Western societies, right? The various times in history, Western societies have been known for rigidly prizing a particular sense of honor. And also, people are people, not robots governed by abstract rules. You know, these ideas of honor and reputation are just, like, they seem exotic and foreign to people who don't speak those languages because they're, I don't know, yeah, because they're looking at it from an outsider's perspective, or at least that's my intuition. I have a friend who, whenever anyone talks about, like, oh, well, as you know, people from Asia, they don't like to lose face. And he goes, right, as opposed to Westerners who love being publicly humiliated. My point is simply that normally it would annoy me to go on about the idea of a sense of honor in a creature from this setting, because I would assume that it was like expressing these stereotypes. But actually, I don't know if that's the case. As far as I know, they only really turn up in one scenario, which is from an issue of Dungeon Magazine. And there, that sense of honor is used to basically turn them into potential allies for the PCs, because you find a juvenile Tako that's trapped, and if you free it, then the rest of the community will owe you one, and they will like come in to pay the debt, because that's what they're like, right? They really believe in honoring those sorts of obligations and aiding those who have aided them. And that means that the sort of moral of this thing is these spear octopus weirdos are actually pretty sound guys, and I like that for a certain kind of campaign. You know, I think if you're going to embrace a particular type of weirdness, the idea that just because something looks freaky and has a bunch of limbs, it's not necessarily an evil creature, or even if it is, it might be willing to help you out under the right circumstances. I think that's an important part of reinforcing that campaign's aesthetic. I don't know if the Taco are intended to replicate a particular creature from like a particular folklore or literature. I know that there are a variety of different sort of, you know, octopus creatures or just, you know, aggressive behavior attributed to octopuses. But I don't know if this is a reference to a specific thing. I couldn't find anything under that name. So yeah, these guys are okay. I think I might change their name. I get that it comes from a different source and it just means octopus, but I feel like when people hear it, they're just going to think of tacos, and that's regardless of where it actually comes from. It's all about what it sounds like to the players, and if you protest that that's not what you intended, that doesn't matter. That's just the way it wound up. All right, that's about all the monsters that we have time for today. In our next episode, well, in the middle of the week, we've got an all-new episode of Patron Deities, and then at the end of this week, we're going to be taking a look at the monsters of the medieval city, and I hope that you will join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons attribution license. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.